10 hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needing something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Modo Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.
And a good Thursday, everybody. Welcome in. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Chase McKay, Michelle Knezovic here with you. I feel like I've been doing this for the last 3 hours with Michelle. It turns
Welcome
out
to
I have.
My life.
Yeah, I know. It's not too bad. You get used to it after a while.
Yeah, some days are easier than others. Today yeah. I was nice and chipper this morning. So
yes,
that's
for
good.
Sure. We got a great show planned for you. As we'll talk a lot of different things, including some hockey with Greg Wyshynski at 9:45, also some college hoops mixed in there. But we start things off with the Titans, something that we've talked a lot about over the last few days. Rand Carthon officially announced as the GM of the Titans. He'll be introduced tomorrow at a press conference. I'm curious of who all is involved in that. Last time when John Robinson was introduced, that was also when Mike Mularkey was named. They took the interim tag off. He was officially named the head coach, so it was Mularkey, Robinson, and then President Steve Underwood. I am curious if Amy Adams Strunk will be a part of things tomorrow. I would assume she probably won't be, but you never know. And then will Vrabel be up there too? We will find out. So looking forward to that. But I start with this: how much input do we think former Titans head coach Jeff Fisher had with this hire? Fisher worked with Rand Carthon with the Rams organization. He was on Caroline Willie and D-Mace yesterday and had a lot of praise for Rand Carthon. But I thought this was pretty telling, Michelle. At the very end of the interview, when Caroline asked Jeff Fisher this question.
Did anyone from the Titans reach out to you about Rand, or did you reach out to the Titans, given your history and the fact that you are a Titan, about your experience with Rand Carthon?
I can't answer that question.
Dang it.
Figured I'd ask.
And that was a very Jeff Fisher-like answer, but that told me everything that I needed to know. And I'll say this, Michelle. I don't think that's a bad thing. Jeff spent a long time here in this organization. No, he didn't work with Amy Adams Strunk, per se. Worked with her father, Bud Adams. But, you know, you can say what you want about Jeff Fisher and his record. He is the all-time winningest coach in Titans history, which if you go and listen to that interview, he believes that record will fall with the Mike Vrabel, Rand Carthon connection. But I think reaching out to him as somebody that knows Rand Carthon was a wise move.
No, what 100%, Chase. And he obviously is still viewed highly within the organization. Like you mentioned, all-time winningest coach. He worked with Rand when he was with the St. Louis Rams early in his career. And we're going to play some audio from the interview, but, you know, just the overarching message I think you could take away from Jeff Fisher yesterday on Caroline Willie and D-Mace was that he believes that Rand Carthon really is a rising star and thinks that him and Mike Vrabel will have a really good working relationship together and have the ability, like you mentioned, to beat his winning record, Mike Vrabel, to surpass him as all-time winningest coach, and believes that this hire is taking the Tennessee Titans in a really good direction. We talked about, you know, the firing of John Robinson in the middle of the season, and however you view that move, if you wanted that to happen, if you didn't want that to happen, we can look at how the season panned out. Would you have waited until the end of the season? Would you have given him an opportunity to, you know, try to rewrite those mistakes next season? Some people still would have fired him, but I think if you look at the silver lining now, you did get a really, really, hopefully great, you know, from what everybody is saying and the recommendations that they're giving Rand Carthon, think that he is absolutely ready for a role as a general manager. A young guy, but really well-connected in the industry, really knowledgeable, and you might have really lucked out getting a great general manager.
Yeah,
this hire.
And you just used the key phrase, lucked out, because as I said earlier on Robbie and Rex Road, I think this organization has made some boneheaded moves in their history. And I think that firing the general manager when they fired the general manager was a boneheaded move. I will stand by that. Now, if you wanted to evaluate him after the season and then make a move, I mean, I can understand that. I can make the case for it. But I can also, like you just said, make the case for him getting the opportunity to fix it. But they ultimately decided to move on. Where the luck comes in is they might have actually upgraded. We don't know. I mean, it's got to play out, but everything you read and believe and you look at where he came from and how much he had his hands on building that roster, that's the deepest roster in the NFL, and they don't have an elite quarterback, at least to this point right now, and they're one of the favorites to win the Super Bowl. So if all that pans out, I mean, I would say that you for sure have lucked into it that – you might actually come out better than you did. And I, again, would – and then, you know, nobody's going to call it a boneheaded move. They're going to be like, well, they made the right move. I mean, look what they got. But if you really look at the evidence at the time, I mean, I still think that was a dumb move because it hurt the season.
Well, and some people may look at, you know, when Mike Mularkey was fired here and think, what? Like, they went to the playoffs. You're firing him now? But then look at the coach you went and got. And look at what Mike Vrabel, in his short time here with the Tennessee Titans, has done. So, you know, a scenario where maybe you might scratch your head when the move is made, but you could luck out and get a shining star in Rand Carthon. Like you said, he will be speaking to the media tomorrow. Still don't know a time on that, but we had Charles Robinson on Robbie and Rex Road, and he said he's definitely a press conference guy, a well-likable guy, so he'll be able to probably win over some fans by – speaking to everybody tomorrow.
I think he already has too. I mean, like, it's funny. I've had a few people go, how are we supposed to know what this guy is? Well,
you're not.
I mean, sometimes, you know, you don't, but you can give an opinion based on what you've seen out of San Francisco. I mean, these guys get these opportunities because of the organizations that they've been connected to. And then if you listen to Jeff Fisher yesterday, he basically, you know, he told you a lot of good things about him, so including that Jeff Fisher believes that Carthon will flourish alongside Mike Vrabel.
It's not going to be, okay, I'm taking this. I want this guy. You want that guy. I have final say, so I'm getting this guy. And you got to buy into it and stand up there on national TV, and we have to have everybody clap because we like our pick. No, this is legit. This is going to be a legit relationship between the two of them. Now, I don't know what went on behind the scenes as far as the hiring process, but I would have to say that, you know, I've not worked with Mike. I've watched Mike from afar, and I have nothing but respect for what Mike has done to this point and what he's going to do in the future. I have worked with Rand, and I don't see any reason why this thing doesn't flourish.
That's Jeff Fisher yesterday. On Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace, you can hear that full interview at thegamenashville.com or subscribe to the Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace podcast. But, you know, I trust Jeff Fisher. You know, say what you want about him as a head coach and things that happen here and all that. I mean, he was in this league, in this game for a long time, with this organization for a long time. But, and again, everything can look good on paper. It's got to pan out. And Vrabel hasn't talked. I mean, I do hope Vrabel is a part of things tomorrow because I want to hear more from Vrabel on this partnership, on this collaboration. But I know I was fired up when I heard that. I was like, oh, okay. I mean.
When you found out about the hiring?
When I heard Jeff Fisher talk about it.
Oh,
that I
yeah.
was like, now, Jeff is a hell of a salesman. That's why he's lasted as long as he has. But I listened to it, and I was like, okay, all right, I feel pretty good about this guy then. Let's see.
Well, and if you can pull anything away, right, we don't know how this is going to pan out right now.
No.
But if you can pull anything away from the time he spent in San Francisco, we got there in 2017. That was Kyle Shanahan's first year as a head coach. Okay, started off 6-10. Next year, 4-12. 2019, 13-3, lost in the Super Bowl, right? They were able to take those 2 years and almost complete an entire rebuild, be able to make it to the Super Bowl. 2020, drop off a little bit, 6-10, 2021, 10-7, 2022, right now, 13-4, advancing to the divisional round of the playoffs. I would say that's a pretty solid resume considering what they needed to do to that roster in 2017. You had Kyle Shanahan, a young, great head coach. Mike Vrabel here, a young, great head coach. We've seen what he's been able to do. And if him and Rand Carthon can have a relationship similar to the 49ers relationship up there with Kyle and John Lynch, then I think you Titans fans have every reason to be excited, because even just looking in their short time in San Francisco in 3 years, able to complete that full rebuild and make it to a Super Bowl.
It's interesting. Coming up next, I want to look at that. Let's compare that roster to this roster and the work that Rand Carthon and Mike Vrabel will have to do, because I find that to be pretty fascinating. Plus, I do feel better on draft evaluation when it comes to Rand Carthon. We'll discuss that. Take your calls as well, 615-737-1025. Our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. It's Chase and Michelle. We're presented by Hair Club. Love your hair, live your life. Creating custom hair loss solutions for men and women here on 1025, 1063, The Game.
What Rand did for us is he evaluated players. He gave us his honest opinion of the players. When you know, I get Rand aside, you know, a couple of days before the draft, and we'd shut the door and go through the board. He knew the board. He knew exactly how the board was, and you know, he respected the board. And you know, when you say to somebody, Rand, would you take so and so over so and so if we were picking right here? And you go, oh yeah. He's gonna stand by his opinion. He's gonna stand by his statements. He's done the work. You know for a fact that he's seen this particular prospect. And in addition to the player personnel aspects, whether it's, you know, it's the draft or it's pro free agency and all those things, Rand, you could tell, had that unique ability to say, for example, hey, look, we got a starting corner here, for example. This guy in the later rounds going to project into, and he'll be the nickel. He will challenge the starter. And if we can't, because of free agency or whatever the scenario is, get re-sign our starter, he'll step up, and we won't have any drop-off in production. So, you know, he understands the process.
Former Titans head coach, Rams head coach, Jeff Fisher, joining Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace yesterday here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game, talking about Rand Carthon and his drafting ability. And I'll be honest, Chase and Michelle here with you, that I feel better. I feel better. You know, the more you learn, the more people you hear from, the more you read, I mean, you feel better about things. So it sounds to me, listening to that clip, Michelle, that this guy's just a football nerd, which I like.
I love that.
That's what you need. I mean, you know, J-Rob was that way. I mean, he was a scout and had that background. But that's exactly what you need. And another thing that he said in that interview was, if it's a collaboration and Mike has more say, you know, Mike's not going to be as familiar with the players that are later in the draft. Rand Carthon was that guy that, you know, could bring, hey, no, this guy, this is what he can do, and give you kind of the breakdown. So I think that's going to be really important as they go through the player evaluation process.
No, 100%. And, you know, Joe Rexroad did a long article on the hiring, talked to a lot of different people, and some of the later guys that the 49ers have hit on, you know, George Kittle, Brock Purdy, Juwan Jennings, DJ Reed, Dre Greenlaw, Jeff Wilson Jr., right? So a lot of these names you know from this 49ers roster, and being able to hit on the guys in those later rounds because you believe, hey, they can be a significant role player in this offense, in this defense. But then yesterday, I can't remember who the soundbite was from, but you know, he knows which players are going to become pillar players, right, in this offense, in this defense. But he can also spot out guys who, hey, this will be a great addition in the later rounds. Because even though people think you need to hit on all your first round picks, you need to hit on all your second round picks, if you can hit on your fourth, your fifth, your sixth round picks as well, I mean, how much better is your team? Because at the end of the day, you know, your first round, your second round, people are going to know those guys.
Yeah.
If you can do the research and spot you know, diamonds in those fourth, those fifth, those sixth. We've seen some of that here in Tennessee, right? You get a David Long Jr. Amani Hooker was in the later rounds too, I think. Third, fourth.
I can't remember.
But
I think so.
You know, that is going to be detrimental, and that is why we've seen this 49ers roster be able to be so deep and why they've been so successful. He was a fourth round pick.
Yep.
That's why they've been able to be so successful. And that's one of the biggest issues we've seen with this Tennessee Titans roster this year. Because at the end of the day, injuries, they're inevitable in the NFL. They're going to happen. But if you have depth on this roster and you have guys in the later rounds who are able to give you production, it's going to help the team not look as depleted when you do have those injuries week to week.
So looking at the 2017 San Francisco 49ers roster, that was the first year of the John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan era. There's not a ton of differences between that roster and this roster with the Titans, except for I would say that this Titans defense is better than that one that they inherited. But, I mean, that's the year they traded for Jimmy Garoppolo around the trade deadline. He went 5-0. That's when, you know, people started calling him Jimmy Jesus. Like, he just was unbeatable. But you had C.J. Beathard, who's a Nashville product. Brian Hoyer, longtime Patriots backup. Carlos Hyde, Matt Breida, that's your run game. Raheem Mostert was on that team as well. Marquise Goodwin, that was Kittle's rookie year. Let's see, Trent Taylor, Pierre Garçon. I mean, that's what you're working with on offense. Kendrick Bourne. So, I mean, they had a lot of work to do, just like the Titans do, especially on the offensive side of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
So that, again, makes me feel good about, you know, finding those diamonds in the rough, like you said, but just finding those pieces that are going to make this offense click and work better.
Well, and you know what also makes me feel confident is the fact that this is a really good defense right now.
Yeah.
Right? This team doesn't need a full revamp. You have a winning defense right now. So it's your defense is good, and then your offense, you need a couple pieces. And a lot of people might say you need a full revamp. You really don't. You need a couple pieces that could make this team competitive in the AFC. Say you stay with Ryan Tannehill. You stay with Derrick Henry. We know that the offensive line needs some retooling. But you're not going to completely wipe it out and get in a whole new offensive line. You need to retool it.
Well, I mean, you're going to – we said it yesterday. I mean, you basically have one offensive lineman that you would – You feel really good about.
Nate Davis.
Yeah. And you got to re-sign him.
Ben Jones, question mark still. Not sure about retirement. But you're also getting a new offensive line coach, too. Mm-hmm. And he will come with whoever your new offensive coordinator is. So that's going to play a factor, too. What does he want to do with the offensive line? And I think receiver. You need to fix that. Your run game is good. You got Derek. You need to re-sign Hilliard. Tight ends. You got Chig. You got re-sign Austin Hooper or Gronk. Don't even want to get into that yet. But, you know, if he could come in and hit on some guys that can be factors right away in their rookie year and some in free agency, this team is going to look a lot different and you could win the division, right? So you are not so far off. And I think the 7-game win streak, it's, you know, what has happened lately. And that's how you kind of view the team. Oh, this is a losing team. Oh, scrap it. But you've seen that he learned to be patient in San Francisco with those guys. And being patient for those 2 years allowed them to be at the Super Bowl in their third year. He doesn't need that much patience here. Really, a couple moves, retooling of the offense, and this team could be right back in, you know, the contender for the AFC South. I know the Jags look great, but you're not too far off.
Breaking news out of the NFL. We talked to Charles Robinson on Robbie and Rex Road, and this was still a question mark, but now we have the answer. Rick Stroud is reporting the Bucs have fired offensive coordinator Byron Leftwich. The team is making sweeping changes to their coaching staff following an 8-9 regular season and wildcard loss to Dallas. As many as 5 offensive assistants and 2 on defense are expected to be let go.
Well, I talked to Charles Robinson about that a little bit ago, and you know his answer was, you know, a lot of this is surrounded to where is Brady going to be and the question mark they had with their offensive coordinator. But, you know, when Todd Bowles spoke, didn't say that they were, didn't announce a firing right after the loss in the wild card round to Dallas. So that made him think, okay, well, maybe that means Brady's going to end up somewhere else and they'll keep him at OC. But maybe this makes me think a little bit different about the Bucs and if Brady could be staying there.
I still don't think he's staying. I think I look at this, and I understand why you would think that. I look at this more as Todd Bowles is now putting his staff together and not Bruce Arians, because he took over so True. Late. It was basically Bruce Arians' staff. I look at it more that way as opposed to Brady coming back. So.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good point, right? Because Bruce Arians, he was kind of there, and then it was like, okay, Todd, Bruce Arians just kind of stepped into, he's in an administrative role with the Bucks now.
Mm-hmm. Like, I could see Leftwich getting another shot at being an OC. I mean, just a year ago, he was rumored for head coaching jobs.
Yeah. I mean, and we've spoken about how there's six teams still in need of an offensive coordinator. The Titans, the Chargers, Jets, Rams, and there's another one in there that I'm forgetting. But there are a lot of offensive coordinator jobs available. No more general manager positions available. But, I could definitely see him getting another OC job. A lot of people are in need of somebody to lead their offense.
One other point I was going to make about the offensive line, you know, Nicholas Petit-Frere, I want to see what he does under a new O-line coach. Because I think the biggest knock on Keith Carter was the development of the young offensive linemen. Now, could Dylan Radunz be something and be developed? We don't know. I'd probably say no. But, you know, maybe they look at him with the right offensive line coach that's going to have more, because that's where you're at now, is you're going to be developing younger players on your O-line. You'll bring in some free agents.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have to, but you want somebody that's going to develop these young offensive linemen.
Yeah, I think Dylan Radunz is still a question mark. I know a lot of people are already ready. Well, they were ready last year to write him off. But the unfortunate truth of the NFL is you need him as a backup, because your O-line room is so thin right now that you need to have him, at least whether he's going to be a swing tackle, whether he's going to be, you know, a second or third string guy. But it's so important to have depth on the offensive line. I don't think he can be a starter. Maybe if a new O-line coach is able to develop him and something clicks for him, he's able to have a huge jump from this year to next year. He also has the ACL injury right now, too, mm-hmm. So that's going to be something to monitor. You got put on IR late in the season. But, I mean, you got to keep him on the roster because you need depth at that position, and you can't just go get a whole new starting lineup and also backups and also third strings. So he's going to be there. I would take Nicholas Petit-Frere over him. Hopefully he can develop even further. But Dylan Radunz, I mean, it'd be great if the offensive line coach would be able to, you know, help him further his career at that position. But
I'd love to see them bring back Mike Munchak. They won't, but that'd be
awesome.
Where
is he nowadays?
He was in Denver. I don't know if he's
– I don't even know if he's anywhere right now.
I don't know if he's coaching. He may be done, but – we will see. How will the coach and GM relationship change with this new regime of Mike Vrabel and Rand Carthon? We will discuss that coming up next. And Jeff Fisher believes that there's one coach-GM combination that better watch out with this new lineup with the Titans. We'll discuss that coming up next. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
You have to be able to predict and have a sense of timing with respect to where you want to get to. I'll say this, and I'm not going out on a limb here, but Trent Baalke and Doug Peterson, their life just got much harder because Rand and Mike are going to have a relationship that, in my mind, will last for a long time.
Hmm.
You know, the rest of the division, you know what Indy's up against. You know where Houston's at. Trent Baalke and Doug Peterson did a phenomenal job over the last year in putting that team together. We're still witnessing that stuff, okay? But Rand and Mike are going to give them a run for their money right off the bat.
Former Titans head coach Jeff Fisher yesterday on Caroline Willie and D-Mace talking about Rand Carthon, Mike Vrabel, their relationship. Welcome back in, Chase and Michelle. Chase McKay, Michelle Knezovic, reporter Nick Kieser. Behind the glass here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. I thought that was telling. Now, that's where the salesman comes in. But that was telling. Because I would think right now, today, going into next year, the Jags are going to be the favorite to win the division. They just won it.
They're still in the playoffs.
They have shown signs of major improvement as the year has gone on. And I think, to his point, Houston is in a rebuild, but they may be there for a while. Indy, who knows what the heck they're in. Rebuild, essentially. They got to find the quarterback. But I find that to be interesting. If they can quickly turn this around and add some pieces on offense, keep the defense relatively intact, you know, make some tweaks here and there, that, hey, watch out. Trent Baalke and Doug Peterson, because here comes Rand Carthon and Mike Vrabel.
Yeah, I agree. I mean,
Ray Rand.
I mean, you look at this Jags offense and what Trevor Lawrence has been able to do in just his second year with a head coach who knows what he's doing and some pieces around him. I mean, Travis Etienne, Christian Kirk, Zay Jones, and then let's also not forget that next year Calvin Ridley is heading to Jacksonville.
That's big.
Which is going to really help this offense. Just another threat on offense, another tool for Trevor Lawrence to use. But, Chase, like we talked about, this Titans team isn't leaps and bounds behind this Jags team. The Jags team has all the momentum right now, and they've been able to make a huge jump from last year to this year. And we all saw it, right? They beat the Titans. They're in the playoffs. They beat the Chargers. Now they take on the Chiefs. They were irrelevant for so many years, and in 2 years, here they are, making a run in the playoffs. And I agree, though, with Jeff Fisher. I mean, this Titans team, everybody is so down on them right now. But they really, a couple moves and you hit on them, this could be a completely different team. Because it's not like you're the Bears. It's not like you're the Texans. It's not like you're the Colts, who I don't even know what they're doing up there.
But they don't either.
You're really close. I talked about this yesterday with you. I mean, if you look at the team last year, the three main pieces that made this team look a lot different, I point to, are a healthy Taylor Lewan, Roger Saffold, and A.J. Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Three main pieces that you didn't have on the field this year, which completely helped which completely changed the offense.
Yeah, I mean, if you put together a Hall of Fame caliber offensive line, and then don't change anything else, even though I don't love that because you still need help at the receiver position, you're going to see more production. I mean, Tannehill's going to have more time to throw the ball. He's got to be healthy too.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to obviously help Derrick Henry. So, I mean, that right there just shows you how important the guys up front really are. It's that game within the war in the trenches.
Well, and something that just off of the offensive line, you know, Mike Vrabel in his end-of-year press conference mentioned that a couple different times. You know, well, the offensive line's got to protect the quarterback, right? There were a couple different comments from him throughout the season at that last press conference about protecting the quarterback. Look at San Francisco's offensive line and what they've been able to help Brock Purdy do. Look at that run game, right? So it obviously is an emphasis there too, because at the end of the day, it's the emphasis of being great around your fine quarterback.
I just hope
above average quarterback.
Right. I just hope Vrabel doesn't bring back this whole "we need to go from good to great" crap like he had a few years ago. You missed that.
Remind me.
That was his slogan. I think it was his second year. We're trying to go from good to great, and we all were like, "Really? this is your thing."
We've seen this team be great, right? They were the one seed just last year. That really wasn't that long ago. And that's the thing in the NFL is sometimes you don't need a full blow it all up and build it all back up. You can do it quicker than a lot of other sports.
Interesting text from David in Arkansas. I'm not trying to be a downer, but can we take Jeff Fisher's word? Seems like a lot of homerism. I want to see results before we get too excited about what Coach Fish has to say. Let's not forget he benefited from the late, great GM. Fair point, but I trust Jeff Fisher just because whether I agreed with every move he made along the way, he still was in this for a long time, and he knows this organization. He knows how this organization operates. And we have seen Amy Adams Strunk operate in similar ways to her father.
Well, and, you know, I never had the chance to cover Jeff Fisher here. Don't know, you know, much about him. I only started covering this market about
players.
A year and a half ago.
Team Mace, what a player.
I need to go find that audio. But, I mean, if he's going to give a raving review of him on the air and it doesn't pan out, like, that just looks bad on him. And I know he's not, you know, in the NFL anymore, but I don't know. I just think if somebody's going to go on the radio and they're going to speak so highly of somebody, like, why would you why would you say that if you don't actually believe it?
Right.
And it turns into smoke and it blows up and everything. I don't know. I think to go on the air, and you can, however you feel about Jeff Fisher, but it's going to look bad on him if he goes on and raves about Rand Carthon and it turns out awful.
Yeah.
And maybe it will, but he truly believes that he has the potential.
Yeah, but and here's the other thing, too. Whether you're believing somebody's word or not, he knows as much as we do about Rand Carthon, the general manager. He's speaking on Rand Carthon, the director of player personnel or pro personnel, and, you know, what he did with him. But, I mean, it's – we don't know. I mean, some people just aren't good in the big chair. And some people are better in the big chair than they were as an assistant. We don't know until it actually plays out. But we're gonna find out some things tomorrow. You know, we heard, you know, our comments of he can win the press conference, which, you know, really doesn't matter at the end of the day. It just makes everybody feel better when that happens. One thing I am curious about before we go to your phones: if Vrabel is a part of it tomorrow, which I think we both kind of feel like he will be, do you think he's going to get asked more questions about working with Rand Carthon, or now that's the opportunity to say, hey, why'd you make all these changes? Why'd you move on from Downing? Why'd you move on from Keith Carter? You know, you did it. We talked to you, and then a few hours later you did it. Because I do think that, you know, we're like elephants. We never forget. I think that's going to come up.
Well, I think Vrabel and Rand Carthon will, if what they've been telling us about, you know, the collaboration and they want them to be on the same team and they both will report to Amy, I think that we will see both of them there. Now, if Amy Adams Strunk is there, I think there will be a lot of John Robinson questions. I truly do.
Which is why I think she won't be there.
Agree with that as well. Will Vrabel get asked about OC and why he fired Todd Downing? Probably. And will his answer be about, you know, we're just looking to hire the next person, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
This is what we're looking for. I think he'll dodge a lot of them because, you know, the way I look at it at this point is, okay, it's already done. It's been done for weeks now. They're moving on.
Mm-hmm.
So what more is he going to say? He already had his end of year press conference, and then we saw him fire Todd Downing and Keith Carter and other coaches after that. And by his comments about the offense, you know, we got to be faster. You know, Derek can't fumble the ball. The offensive line needs to protect Ryan Tannehill. By all of those comments and then him firing them, I feel like you can put two and two together and he's not going to say much more.
No, he won't.
Will it be asked? Probably.
Sure. And it should be. I mean, that's the thing about, you know, kind of what we do is – you already, a lot of times we ask questions we already know the answers to.
Oh, yeah.
And, but you still have to ask the question. Like, you know, he's not going to answer the question. You know, he's going to bristle at it or he's going to sidestep it. You know that Amy's not going to, they're probably not going to put Amy in that position because, okay, we never get to talk to the owner. Time to ask all the questions. Why'd you fire John Robinson? Like, that would totally 100% be one.
Well, and it would be, why didn't you speak after you fired him as well?
You may be right. But I don't even care about that at this point. Now it's like, okay, I have you, so I want to get the answers. And yes, you did a one-on-one with Teresa Walker, but now I get to ask the question, you know, and see if I can get a different answer out of you. And her if she does speak tomorrow and she's being prepped, if I'm sitting there and I'm prepping her, I'm going, okay, your answer to that is, listen, today is not about the past. Today is about Rand and our new future, and we're excited to have him as general manager. Boom, you're done.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that she's probably going to answer it that way, but you still have to ask the question.
I mean, 100%. Of course you have to ask the question because it's the first opportunity you've had to ask that question. right? And the answer will probably be, and if Mike Vrabel's asked as well, probably be, hey, today's about Rand Carthon. And you do kind of feel a little, like, it kind of stinks for Rand because he's getting introduced. It's his first, like, it's his first duty as the general manager of this franchise. But there is going to be John Robinson questions that are going to be brought up.
Yeah. I could do a Vrabel impression. What do you, you know, what's going to be different with this relationship as it was to John? Well, John's not here. Really excited about working with Rand and, you know, what he brings to the table, but, you know, or something like that. That's basically.
Yeah. I mean, I think it'll just all be turned to Rand because that's what tomorrow is about for them, introducing him.
Let's real quick. Adam wants to weigh in on Rand Carthon. Adam, welcome in.
Hey, Adam.
Hey, Miss Michelle. Hey, so real quick. So my feelings, I don't really get, these dudes are all liars when it comes to these press conferences. Y'all know that. Like, they're just kind of, they are. They're like, we all want to say it. We know it. John missed too much. And, you know, I'm glad it was him and not me. If they were going to be truthful, that's what they would say. I'm glad, I mean, he got fired. I'm glad he got fired and I didn't. You know, that's the right answer. But no, man, I'm just glad it's something different and not Calvin. And I'm glad that they didn't do the, you know, they haven't done the Tim Kelly thing yet, you know. So, if Chase, if you remember, I can't remember if you were here or not in the town, but when Jeff Fisher turned over from the Titans, it was like immediately went on to Mike Munchak. And as a fan, I'm sitting here going, oh, my God, why? Why would you do that? Why would you make offensive line coach? We have the sorriest offense in the league. You're going to make an offensive line coach our head coach? Like, you trust him to go out and do that? So, I was so disappointed. And so, I was staring down that barrel right there. It's like, we're going to have the same dude come in and do the exact same thing J-Rob did. And so, I'm just glad they decided to try something completely different.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and just a completely different guy. So, I like that.
Thanks for the call, Adam. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Adam.
Yeah, they went to Munch because that was a lockout. I think if Bud Adams knew the lockout was looming, and it just the safer play was to stay in house, because it happened late. Jeff, that whole thing kind of happened later, you know, in the off season process. It was well into January when they ultimately made that move. Had a lockout not been looming, I don't know if Munchak would have gotten the job.
Yeah, maybe they would have gone through more of a hiring process.
I think they would have gone through a different process for sure. Coming up next, it's time for the Daily Power Play. We'll talk to Greg Wyshynski from ESPN, talk some hockey with him. That's all next. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
It's time for the Daily Power Play. Covering the Predators and the NHL.
With a shot that stopped by Searle.
Now on Chase and Michelle.
We do it every day at 9:45. Time for the Power Play here on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. And every Thursday, we talk to Greg Wyshynski from ESPN. Greg, how you doing?
Doing well. Can't complain. Well, I could. My inbox has been a toxic waste dump in the last 24 hours, but other than that, it's been pretty good.
So you have a piece up on ESPN Plus about what GMs are saying about the 2022-2023 NHL trade deadline. I actually sat down with a GM yesterday and talked about that a little bit. A conversation with David Poile that I had, and you know, I think it's still a lot of positioning from what I gathered from him, but he does think there will be some moves. But obviously, they're all looking at the salary cap and what they got to do to move some money around. But what were some of your takeaways from your conversation with GMs across the league?
Yeah, it was interesting to get some insight. I mean, for those who don't know the timeline, this is right around when midwinter meetings are happening for all these teams. And essentially, those are the meetings that bring everybody in hockey operations together, the amateur scouts, the pro scouts, the executives, everybody together to kind of map out what the plans are going to be for the next few months, you know, if this, then that kind of stuff, especially when it comes to teams, places, and the standings and things of that nature. So we're going to get a better idea, I think, of how these teams are going to approach things. But there's a couple of interesting factors at play with the trade deadline. One is what one general manager referred to as the puddle of mud in the middle of the standings, a bunch of teams that may or may not be in it. I think I might be speaking to one of those markets right now in trying to figure out exactly how to approach the deadline. The salary cap is a huge, huge, huge problem. The uncertainty about the cap for next season, insofar as One day Gary Bettman says it could jump by $4 million. The next day he says it's only going to be $1 million. There could still be negotiation about trying to meet in the middle between the players and the owners. That uncertainty certainly plays into this whole situation as well. And everybody's capped out. Everybody's using long-term injured reserve. It's very possible that we're going to see some of those trades that involve a third team eating up some of the salary of a player like, for example, Jonathan Toews or Patrick Kane. And the other thing, and this was something that a few of the GMs I spoke to brought up, it's the Connor Bedard effect. We got a generational talent at the top of the draft next year. And right now, there's only one team that has sacrificed their first-round pick, and that was the Florida Panthers in the ill-fated Ben Sherratt trade last year. It was a conditional pick. Because it wasn't in the top 10, it reverted to this year, and the Montreal Canadiens could potentially have two lottery picks this year because of it. Everybody else has held their lottery tickets for the Bedard Powerball, and I think you're going to probably see that continue on in as we approach the trade deadline.
How much do you think GMs are trying to think ahead of when the salary cap does go up by more than $1 million? And, you know, okay, are they thinking that there's going to be a ton of moves at that point, and we're going to see a lot of the moves that maybe can't happen right now?
So, I mean, they're always thinking about it. They all have, for the most part, capologists on their staff that are mapping out what the next 2 years could look like under different scenarios. I think it definitely plays into things like signing players long-term. For example, Bo Horvat of the Canucks is assumed to be traded. He's having a career year. Everything that the team has said is that they're prepared to pay him at one level, but probably not the level he's reached this year in a contract year. So wherever he goes via trade is probably looking not only for the short-term benefit of having him on the roster, but also trying to sign him long-term. And if you're a team like the Boston Bruins, for example, if you acquire Bo Horvat, you're probably doing the same thing you did with Hampus Lindholm last year when they got him from the Ducks, which is bring him in for the immediate impact of having a great veteran player on your roster, but then also look ahead at, you know, potentially Patrice Bergeron retiring, potentially David Krejci no longer being there, and then signing him for a longer-term contract, knowing that the cap is going to rise in the next couple of years. So they're always thinking forward about it. They're always trying to consider all the options. But in the immediate near future, it's just impossible to really make any moves right now because they're all up against the ceiling.
Talking to Greg Wyshynski from ESPN, talking some hockey with him. Goaltending has obviously been the high point of the Nashville Predators season. Juuse Saros especially is finding himself back in the Vezina conversation. But an interesting discussion that we had on our morning show earlier today was, I mean, could you see a Vezina Trophy winner on a non-playoff team? I believe it happened with Sergei Bobrovsky a few years ago with Columbus in 2013, but that hadn't happened like 80 years before that. Obviously the Predators are still in contention. They very well could make the playoffs, but it's kind of crazy to think about just because how good Saros has been, and he is the reason that they're even in contention right now for the playoffs.
Yeah, he's been terrific, and you know, I think deservedly should be in the conversation for the Vezina. There's two things working against him right now, and like you said, one of them is the fact that if the Predators don't qualify for the playoffs, can he win the Vezina? Well, the general managers are the ones who vote for this award, and traditionally they kind of weigh more traditional stats, like wins, for example, is a thing that always seems to be at the forefront of Vezina conversations. Usually when you see, if you ever see a goalie from a non-playoff team make it as a finalist for the Vezina, it's usually one of those teams that would otherwise be absolutely horrible were it not for the effort to this goalie and him kind of outkicking his coverage and playing a lot better than you'd expect him to play on a team that's that bad defensively. So I don't know if Juuse qualifies under that, but he might. The problem for him right now is that there's a few goalies in the queue ahead of him, I think. You know, like it's widely assumed that Linus Ullmark of the Boston Bruins, who is, I think at last count, lost two games this season in regulation, is definitely going to be a Vezina finalist, probably the winner. You have Connor Hellebuck, who sort of revived the Winnipeg Jets since Rick Bonus got there. And then you've got, you know, Ilya Sorokin and Jake Ottinger with the Dallas Stars and a few others that I think might be ahead of the queue right now for Juuse. But there's no question that, like, you know, his play has been stellar, and maybe you could even make a more of a Hart Trophy argument for him than a Vezina Trophy argument from this year.
The Oilers beat the Kraken 5-2 Tuesday night, and what's crazy is Evander Kane was back in the lineup sooner than expected. He was expected to miss 3 to 4 months after that scary situation with him where he's cut by a skate blade, but he's back out there the other night and saw 17 minutes of ice time. Pretty cool to see him bounce back like that.
It's remarkable. I mean, I had the story earlier this month from Kenny Holland, their GM, saying that they expected Kane to be back before the All-Star break, and it left some people just gasping, right? Like, to think about the type of that injury, the nature of that injury, the usual recovery time for that injury, and to think about him back in that lineup so quickly, I mean, it is remarkable. And like he said, I mean, full credit to all of the medical technicians and doctors and everybody who were on site to take care of him in that moment, and then everybody who rehabbed him as well. But he's such an important player for that team. I mean, you know, when he's in that lineup, they just become so much more dangerous. They get deeper. They're able to move their forward pieces around a little bit more. Obviously, he's found a real chemistry with Connor McDavid, which I think speaks pretty good to McDavid threatening to break 150 points this year, which is his current pace. The Oilers are an interesting team. They were my cup pick before the year, for better or for worse. I thought they'd figure out a little bit more of the championship-level defense than they have. But there's still time, and I think, you know, they're going to be looking to acquire at least a defenseman to help out that group. They're a dangerous team, and at some point, when you put two generational talents on the same roster like they have with McDavid and Draisaitl, those guys are going to figure out a way to get this team to play for a cup.
Yeah, absolutely. We will see if this is the year and if your prediction turns out to be right. Greg, appreciate the time as always. We will talk to you next week.
Considering I picked the Islanders last year, probably not. Probably not a right prediction, but thanks for having me.
I mean, come on. You pick them and get our man Barry Trotz fired. Come on, dude.
Yeah, it's like the ultimate kiss of death. It's like a poison ivy kiss of death when I pick the team.
Awesome. Thanks, Greg. Appreciate it. That is Greg Wyshynski from ESPN. Joins us every Thursday at 9:45 as a part of the Power Play. Predators and Blues tonight. I'll have pregame for you at 6 o'clock. And by the way, happy birthday to the voice of the Predators, Pete Weber, who will join me in the first segment tonight. So looking forward to that.
And also Dolly Parton.
And Dolly Parton.
Two legends. Two Nashville legends.
It is her birthday as well. Coming up next, we'll get back into the Titans. Rand Carthon named the general manager. Can this franchise take another big step as a franchise? We will discuss that next here on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Moro Casino. America's Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.